Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. The sole focus of tonight's KVC Arts once again is on Jock Bartley, one of the founding members of Firefall. There are a few of the original members with the group today, but Jock is the only original member to have stayed with the group through today. Now tonight, with an incredible history which interweaves so many, we'll hear from and about their new album, Comet. Just out.
All the empty words I've spoken, all the promises I've broken, all the lovers and the loves I've pushed away. Now they all come back to haunt me, and the silence seemed to taunt me, 'cause they turned the tables round the other way.
Well, this new album, I really do love it, and you've already hit as far as, oh my God, yes, and it continues that sound, that Colorado sound, whatever that was, but so...
Yeah, whatever that was.
Yeah, and do you recall, by the way, when it was that you first heard that Firefall was, quote, that Colorado sound? Do you remember that?
I know we're... No, you know. I do remember the first time driving around Boulder. Mm-hmm. Where, of course, Atlantic Records was smart enough to not put You Are the Woman out first as a single. They kind of figured You Are the Woman would be a smash hit pop song, and they put Livin' Ain't Livin' out first. I remember driving around Boulder, listening to the radio, and a song of ours came on off our new album with me playing a solo, and I nearly drove off the road. It was great. But, you know, we were just so lucky. It was really the songs in that first album was just a magical kind of deal. And when it came out, it's surprising to me still that our first album, self-titled Firefall, went gold faster than any other album on Atlantic Records. And when you think about Atlantic Records, that's the Rolling Stones, Aretha Franklin, Led Zeppelin, Young Rascals. I mean... Yeah. Our album went gold faster than a Rolling Stones album? That's amazing.
Yeah, who'd have ever known?
We hit it at just the perfect time with the perfect cover. And in fact, I kind of designed and thought of that cover. You know, when you're looking at a wall full of 40 or 50 album covers like they used to do on record stores,
right.
I wanted people to go, wow, what is that? You know, just because it would be so striking. But because we had such initial big success in radio-friendly music, suddenly we were on the road with the Doobie Brothers, with Michael McDonald and Skunk Baxter, Fleetwood Mac during the White Album.
Oh, wow.
And one of my favorite times, we played the band's last tour with them. Robbie Robertson, Levon Helm, Rick Danko, and all the boys. And, you know, the band was one of the premier and best American musical acts ever. I mean, the band was just astounding. And we did their whole last tour with them. And then they went out to California and made the last Waltz movie and broke up.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
But I sat maybe 10, 12 feet away from Levon Helm every night and just watched him play and sing.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
And we played with Lynyrd Skynyrd before the...
Did you?
We were with Lynyrd Skynyrd for about a month before the plane crash.
October
77. You know, it was just to have been there in the 70s and open shows for all these amazing, amazing bands. And then, of course, the best shows probably we ever played was Fleetwood Mac during Rumors Tour, playing in front of 75 or 100,000 people a day.
Sure. On Comet, I'm glad you told me about the artwork, because I really love to ask about the whole thing, not just the songs, but the art and the sequencing and just everything. One of the other songs of yours, you know, I noticed that with your stuff, and you mentioned the art of storytelling with just a few lines to doing it, and that's a great way of how you put that, I have to say, because there is a lot of storytelling going on, as opposed to, say, a first-person perspective kind of song.
Right.
But even if the story, once it gets to song form, has been changed enough that it can apply to many things, it still has its roots.
Every night and day.
So I think with this, Jock, I'm looking at an Inception kind of story for something like There She Is. This one does feel like a song about not so much a real event, but more the idea of something. And it is an intentionally upbeat and happy song.
Which is a little bit rare for me as a songwriter. That song really had my girlfriend Laura in mind. There she is looking so pretty. But it's a fictional song. And what's interesting is when I wrote the song with just me on guitar and singing that, I kind of thought it would be like Just Remember I Love You, kind of a lighter ballad with acoustic guitars. But as soon as I presented it to the band, when we had rehearsals, it was obviously a big rock song. And then David added the horns at the front. It was really great. But the interesting thing was, is back in the day, between Rick and Larry's songs, Rick Roberts wrote songs like You Are the Woman and Just Remember It, right, and Strange Way, you know, that were kind of formula songs. And he, in the back of his mind, he wanted girls and women to call radio stations and request that song.
Gotcha.
You know, which they did with You Are the Woman, and it's gotten 7 million airplays and all of that. Larry Burnett, on the other hand, his songs were like this purging of his soul, this thing that came out. And when you would take Rick Roberts' softer songs and his harder songs and put them up against Larry Burnett's softer songs and his harder songs, the diversity that we had on any given Firefall record was really cool. You sometimes got surprised with a hard-charging rock song. And when we started making Comet, and I found out how hard-charging and how much of a rock song There She Is was, I kind of thought, perfect, because we had lighter songs, we had other songs, you know, more moody, melodic songs, and then we had Hard Charge and There She Is,
yes,
which to me, I'd love to get a commercial out of that and have Revlon or some women's clothing. Now, there she is, looking so pretty. It'd be perfect, but I'm really proud of that song, and that one actually is kind of about my girlfriend.
Truly, okay. How about Before I Met You? Is that also directed right at her?
Yes and no, but yeah.
Before I met you, the sky didn't seem so blue. I wondered why I was always walking uphill. Before I met you, I knew I didn't have a clue. Dancing around the holes in myself, I needed help to fill. How was I to know you'd find me soon and you'd love me so? A certainty, I really knew before I met you.
That one again was musically, I really wanted it to try to sound like Firefall.
Okay.
And
okay.
The chords in the chorus, E minor, D, and C, are the same chords that Rick Roberts wrote with So Long, which was another place where I got to play great solos over. And that one's kind of fictional, but it was about my girlfriend. Each song that a songwriter writes generally comes from a different place. You know, a title might pop into your head, or else you've got a great melody, or, oh, I love these chords, or whatever.
Sure.
And it's just really, it kind of shows on the Comet record that there's different inspirations, but all that matters at the end of the day is what the song sounds like and how it flows into the next song on a record.
Yes.
And I really think that we succeeded in making a record that flows along really good.
Oh, yes, indeed. I have to say that I'm the type of person who appreciates the flow of an album. Well, I did grow up on albums before 8-tracks and etc., etc. So let's talk about sequencing for a second. We were talking about some of these songs, and I do have a few more songs from the new disc, Comet, that I want to ask you about. But interestingly, I didn't talk about these songs in order, as I often do, because I do appreciate the flow. Why do you open with this one? Why do you close with this one, etc.? Were you completely hands-on then as far as sequencing and getting everything together in that sense and having that flow like any good story or joke?
Right. That was me.
Oh, beautiful.
And I knew that with how good Way Back When was as a song and how reminiscent it was and how it really told the story of the 60s and all of that, I knew that that needed to start the record. And then, you know, one of my favorite songs on there, now let me just aside say that the music business has gotten so strange in the last 15, 20, 30 years. You know, I don't know how songwriters make any money now, and most of them don't, even with a huge hit, you know, because of streaming and,
right,
you know, everybody giving away music. And it's not like the old days where you can make a couple $1 million on a song or something. There's some huge hit songs that are all over the radio that aren't making the songwriters or publishers any money. That kind of took the pressure off. And I knew going into this that we should look at all kinds of other songs and other songwriters. And I encouraged the band to present songs. You know, I have 4 songs on the record. I presented 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, the drummer, he and Tony wrote...
We got Hardest Chain there.
Hardest Chain, yeah. Uh-huh. And Gary Jones, our new lead singer of the last 5 years, who lives in Nashville, he wrote Never Be the Same. Gary also found the song A Real Fine Day, which to me... Mm. is perfect for this pandemic because it's so upbeat and happy and catchy, and for 3.5 minutes or whatever it is, it just kind of takes you away and it puts you in this really good mood. And that song was written by our old friend, the late, great Robin Thompson.
Okay.
Virginia, who one of Robin's claims to fame was he was in Bruce Springsteen's first band.
Nice.
But what's interesting is I talked to Robin about what ended up being about 1.5 or 2 years before he died, a couple years ago. And I said, hey, we're putting a new Firefall album together. Do you have any songs you might want to present? And he sent me 2 songs. You know, and I listened to them, and I thought, well, these are nice songs, but I'm not sure they ring the bell like they need to. And when Gary brought the Robin Thompson song, A Real Fine Day, as soon as I heard it, I went, that's on the record.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Not a cloud in the sky, a little breeze in the air. If it started raining, I wouldn't care. I don't know. But I know one thing is true. I woke up this morning looking at you. It's gonna be a good day. Gonna be a real fine day. Gonna be a day to remember all my life. Gonna be a good day. A real fine day.
You know, I knew that that song pretty much needed to be second. And then from that point on, as the guy figuring out the program for the songs, we had 2 major chords and kind of upbeat songs to start with. I knew to put Sandy and Tony's song, Hardest Chain, which was a minor chord and talking about a difficult subject and
yes.
a lot of this stuff. And then I thought, Nature's Way, here we go. And at that point, I thought, okay, after Nature's Way, let's put Younger, which is a fantastic song, and it is so sparse, you can hear everything. You can hear the piano, you can hear the acoustic guitar, the vocals cut through. You know, I really tried to be hands-off on the production on that. And after Younger, I went, now's the time for There She Is. So, yeah, I really kind of conceptualized, okay, I got these 10 songs, how do we put them? And I figured that New Mexico should probably be last just because.
A real fine day. Everything's gonna be all right. Everything's gonna be okay. The sun is
David Fleming in conversation with Jock Bartley with Firefall. They have a new album out called Comet. More at fire-fall.squarespace.com. There's also firefallofficial.com with more on Facebook and other social media platforms, and more with Jock Bartley just ahead. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. We are streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Find many past KVC Arts programs via podcast through iTunes, Spotify, and NPR One. And most, if not all, past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. After coasting on a couple of hits from the 1970s, those are Jock's words, they have a new disc out now called Comet. It was written mostly by Firefall members, but there are a few which come from outside of the group, like this one, Ghost Town.
This house is empty, garden bare. There are no strangers. The sign outside the broken gate says go away. The memories.
I just want to, I guess, quote the press release for a second. Hardest Chain with its minor chords is a dark song, co-penned by Sandy Fica. Not every song we did was You Are the Woman or Just Remember I Love You. That is just funny to me, and I was really curious about, beyond the Firefall group members and their song contributions, where and how some of these other ones came about. So we just got one of them, but there's another one, I believe I want to say Ghost Town. I think this one comes from outside the group, yes?
All right. Well, one of the things that Firefall back in the 70s was known for, and I told you, songs for singing, second, great playing, tasteful playing, you know. But one of the things that we kind of got famous for was the interplay between my lead guitar and David Muse's sax or flute.
Yes.
And in the old days, there's not a lot of bands that have a flute in them.
No.
Russell Tucker had a song and Jethro Tull and stuff, but not too many flutes. Not a real rock and roll instrument. And David's so great that when Firefall wasn't playing a lot, David formed his little David Muse band down in the Tampa, Florida area with a guitar player and a bass player, just a little trio to keep playing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been playing this song, Ghost Town, written by Tony Joe White and another fella. He'd been playing that at his gigs, and he says, I really think this sounds like Firefall. And, of course, it does, and it did. And he didn't write a song for this record, but he brought Ghost Town with him, and we worked it out. And I saw it pretty much as producer as filling that niche of A minor to F sounding like Rick Roberts' songs from the 70s. And he wanted it to kind of make it a flute song. And I went, great, let's do. And that was part of me trying to include his flute and my guitar playing together like what we used to do.
Wow, that is really cool.
Into a ghost town.
Too, that the flute, that David Muse is just as much a draw for me as far as listening to and looking at Firefall. Again, this is, I suppose, because of my jazz connection, that I just love Herbie Mann and folks like that. And, oh, Tim Weisberg, there's another connection, because he spent time with Fogelberg around the Boulder area. But, yeah, so, like, on You Are the Woman, we have just this slight little sound, this just a tag, and that's him. But beyond that, it would be more of a treat, I suppose, to get to see Firefall live. Wouldn't he just launch, and still does, launch into extended solo that just lets you guys sit back and watch?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is, as band leader, and, you know, David has been back in Firefall, and then he'd leave for a few years, and he played with Marshall Tucker for a couple of years, and would come back, and Mark Andes was with Fogelberg for a long time, and other people, and then he joined back in about 5-6 years ago. As band leader, I know that a band who has hit songs owes a huge deal to the ticket-buying public.
Mm-hmm.
And by gosh, you need to have the songs that they're paying to come and hear sound as much like the record as you can make them. And hence, You Are the Woman, Just Remember I Love You, Cinderella, songs like that, we play exactly like the record, and I want them to sound just like the record, because that's what people are coming to hear. Now, having said that, Firefall is really fortunate because we had a bunch of albums and, of course, a lot of different kinds of songs that were on the radio. Every given night on Mexico for Me or Strange Way, where David gets to just go wherever he goes on the flute solo on the end of Strange Way, we have the ability to, within the framework of the band, go new places every night when we're playing live. So really, it's the best of both worlds, because over the decades, we've played with a lot of bands who may only have one or two hits, and the band has gotten so sick of those songs that they, for themselves, change the song up or the arrangement or the groove or do something different with it. And you're watching the crowd, and, you know, the crowd doesn't even know it's their favorite song from this band until a couple of minutes in, when they go, oh, my God, this is my favorite song. I didn't recognize it.
Right.
You know, to me, that's blasphemous. If we tried to change You Are the Woman from anything that it was, it would be stupid, because so many people just relate to that song or tell us in the meet and greets after the show, oh, we got married to You Are the Woman, or I sing that song to my wife every birthday, or whatever. Music is very meaningful to people who don't play it, and it really sets the stage for emotion, memory, their whole life. And that was one of the things that I tried to capture when I was writing way back when. That music of the 60s, where, frankly, it was the Beatles who let everybody else know in the industry that you could write your own songs. Because before that, not too many bands were writing their own songs. And the Beatles hit, and then suddenly everybody's writing their songs. And the music of the 70s pretty much came directly from that great music of the 60s, and bands like the Eagles or Loggins and Messina or Poco or, you know, any of those great bands. We owe a lot to the music that was 10 years before us, and I'm just happy that Firefall got to play a small role in the 1970s.
With every passing life for me will never be the same.
This is going back to Comet and the song Never Be the Same, one that Gary Jones brought to the group. And this is about losing his mom.
Yeah.
You know, so much of the album was made to be upbeat and fun. Let's grab your attention and keep it. But then you did include this one as well. A beautiful, beautiful song as well. Did he bring
indeed.
This to you?
Indeed. Well, what was interesting was, you know, Gary was my really good friend in Nashville for about 15 years. That I'd go down and I'd write with some famous Nashville writers or hang in the Nashville scene, which is really an incredible music scene down there. And Gary's been a singer-songwriter for a long time, and he's always had a great voice, so that when Steven Weinmeister actually left Firefall after being in the band for 20, 25 years, Steven, by the way, sings background vocals on a couple of those songs, and I was able to offer Gary the job to be the lead singer. I encouraged him to present songs or keep writing or whatever, and what was interesting is we had about 8 songs done. And Gary hadn't really presented anything yet. I'm saying, Gary, you need, you know, you got a couple of songs. Heck, you and I wrote a couple of songs a few years ago that might be in contention. You know, let's hear something. And he basically said, well, I got this song about my mom, and played me a demo tape of it. And I went, oh, my God, that's gorgeous. Beautiful melody. A lot of people listen to Never Be the Same and think it might be about a girlfriend who's not with you anymore.
I can see that.
Or a wife who died or something.
Yeah.
But it's about his mom who died when Gary was a young adult. And, you know, when he played that for me, I said, oh, that's great. We need to cut that. And so that song and A New Mexico were pretty much the last 2 songs that we worked on and that kind of filled out the album. To me, it goes back to the songs. When you listen to the great, great records of the past, like some of the best Eagles records or
yes.
Fleetwood Mac Rumors or Kenny Loggins records or whatever, it's the songs. And it's the songs that hit people emotionally. And I know Gary's song, Never Be the Same, strikes a chord with people, even if they don't know it's about his mom's passing.
That's one of those things that I forget who I spoke with about it, but it's one of those great things about taking a specific incident or maybe a specific person that you're writing about, but then making it general enough that more people can relate to it, and therefore this song reaches me more because I know it's not just about
right.
your girlfriend. It could be mine or mother or whatever the case is. So
right. You know, there's so many great songwriters in the world that have filled our radios and record collections and stuff. You think about somebody as amazing and as great as Joni Mitchell.
Yes.
Joni Mitchell would write songs that were deeply personal about a person and events that happened, but she would put it in a way to where the listener would just take it in and it would make it theirs too. And, you know, songwriting is a gift. And in order to, you know, be able to write songs, you really have to kind of turn yourself over to the muse. You know,
sure.
I used to go down and give songwriting lectures and stuff in Nashville. And down in Nashville, of course, everybody kind of thinks that, well, you have to work and make the story perfect and blah, blah, blah. And I would be talking to songwriters that had been working on a set of lyrics for 6 months and nobody'd ever sung the lyrics. And I'm going, song is to be sung. You know, sing the darn thing. And a lot of times, for me, and I learned this as being a lead guitar player, because when I'm on and I'm playing, I'm not really thinking. I'm not thinking about what I just played. I'm not thinking about what I'm about to play. I'm just so in the moment trying to play the best thing that I can play for that song at the time. It's this really spontaneous, almost non-thinking type of thing as a soloist, right? I have used the example of when you used to watch Michael Jordan run a fast break, he wasn't thinking. He wasn't being a left-brain thinker. He was just reacting to what the defense was giving him, or do I pass behind my back and then dunk? Or he was just so in touch with that moment of him running a fast break. There was not a lot of thought involved with that. He was just doing it. And I had to learn kind of the hard way, and I learned from watching Rick Roberts and Larry Burnett write songs, but also as me as a soloist, and I would go down and give these songwriting lectures about if you have a chord progression that you like, that you think you could make a good song out of, and you start singing melodies. So there's no words yet, but you're just singing. Mm-hmm. There's a magical moment when, if you're receptive enough and kind of right-brained enough and in touch with the muse, that you can allow the lyrics to just come out and be. And I've written songs where I open my mouth and start singing, and the first verse is done. And I didn't even really think about it, or what am I writing about, or how am I going to say this? It just comes out, and it is right. And there's been a few songs that I've written that pretty much the entire song kind of came out like that. And as a songwriter, you better tape yourself, because you can't keep up writing what's coming out of your mouth. And not every song is this inspired muse kind of thing.
Sure.
But if you get right-brained enough, and I've learned this as a painter too, when you're staring at a blank canvas and you don't know quite what you're going to try to paint, and you just mix some colors and start.
Yes.
You know, same thing with being a soloist on a song. You know, if you just give up yourself and your ego and you just allow the music or the lyrics to come through you, a lot of times they're great what comes through. And also, I have to say, too, that you have to be very forgiving and not be afraid. Because a sure. lot of the lyrics that you might allow to just come out of your mouth, they might be cliched or trite or a really bad rhyme. And if it is, then you just go, hey, let's change it. But to be really right-brained about your creativity, you know, I really think that society as a whole could certainly use to go back and be more childlike. Everybody thinks way too much and left-brains everything to death. And some of the best music that's ever been made doesn't have a whole lot of thought to it. It's a feel thing from your heart.
Wow.
And it's hard to write lyrics like that, but sometimes they happen.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of. I knew it from the start. I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my.
Let's go back now to my recent conversation with Jock Bartley from Firefall. So those first couple of albums, and you notice we haven't really even touched You Are the Woman and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine, that's totally fine. My real question, with You Are the Woman and these other songs just really overpowering other songs on the album, you know, sometimes people will pay just attention to the hit and miss
right.
the B-side. I'm curious about some of this almost, if we could call it stream of consciousness, that's what we were talking about a second ago with letting this thing flow through you. What are some of the songs from those first couple of Firefall albums that maybe you think people missed because they were really just enamored with the pop?
My initial answer to that is that fortunately back when people were listening to albums and buying albums and loving to, you know, turn it over from side A to side B,
yeah.
they listened to the whole album, and a lot of times fans would tell me that their favorite song was something that wasn't one of the hit records. And I will tell you that when Firefall started really getting together our first album and was going to go record it and actually get serious about it, we had a record deal, that we had Mexico, we had Cinderella, mm-hmm. we had a lot of those songs that were really establishing what the band sounded like. And kind of at the 11th hour, right before we went to Miami from Boulder to record, Rick Roberts wrote You Are the Woman. And I remember a couple of guys in the band going, well, that's not really what we sound like.
Exactly.
That's not really fitting in with some of these other songs. But I'll tell you what, our producer knew immediately. He heard that and he went, there's the hit record right there. And that was just Rick Roberts writing a formula song aimed at women, trying to get them to call radio stations. And the truth is even though it stands out in a poppy, white bread kind of way, when you put that up against Cinderella or Mexico or Strange Way or any of the other songs, it kind of completes what we are. You know, I even think about REO Speedwagon. They were like a hard rock band kind of. And then suddenly they put out that one song.
Keep
that
on
the
loving
power
you.
Ballad.
Yeah,
that suddenly was the biggest hit they'd ever had.
Yeah.
And you never know. You know, all you can do as a musician in a band and a songwriter and a singer and a player is do the best you can in the creation of your music. It's not competitive. It only gets competitive when you put your album out and then there's 50 other albums vying for radio play or the dollar that people would spend at the record store. And Firefall has always had that magical diversity between songs. I mean, to me, Cinderella, Larry Burnett wrote Cinderella when he was 16 years old.
Mm.
And I mean, what do you know when you're 16? You know, that not a whole lot, you know, in terms of worldly stuff. But he wrote that song when he was 16, and he had told me that that thing came out real quick. It was done in like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized how that happens, because if you get right brain, it's interesting, because same thing with lead guitar playing. As a lead player, you are confined by how many scales you know and how many you know, techniques you know and all the book learning and the left brain kind of stuff. But when you step up there to play, you can transcend all of that and then go play this cosmic-inspired solo that people just go, wow, you know, where'd that come from? And you don't know. It came from somewhere deep inside or something emotional. And Firefall has a great balance between that left brain, you are the woman, or just remember I love you stuff, and then Cinderella and some other songs. What's also cool about that is on Just Remember I Love You, which Rick wrote as kind of a formulaic type of pop song.
Trying
you know,
to, yeah, intentionally.
When you add David's and my solo on sax and on guitar and some of the stuff that we do, we bring it back into sounding more like Firefall, even though You Are the Woman is kind of on the outside of what Firefall sounds like. But at the same time, and I've been in the band, you know, 45 years or whatever, you know. Thank God, You Are the Woman has kept me working for 30 years.
Mm, wow.
You are the woman that I've always dreamed of. I knew it from the start. I saw your face and that's the last I've seen of my heart.
I really have to thank you for going back 45 years for some of the philosophical side to some of these questions.
I remember way back when the songs on the radio.
Firefall was a mainstay of the radio when I was maybe around 10. It continued into my teenage years. And then after that, mainstream radio leaned into the synthesizers or glam metal, and so I ended up going away from this music. So it was so really exciting to see bands like Poco, of course the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band still continuing to play, and that you guys were not only, I couldn't say coming back, but rather you never stopped. That is so cool, and I've had a real blast listening and watching the new video. We should say that there is a video for Way Back When. This is out on YouTube.
Which,
just go there and search.
Which, by the way, my son Jamie made that video, and I told him, you know, he got the performance part. And I said, do whatever you want on the choruses, but when it's in the verses and it's talking about Aretha or the Rascals,
that's him.
You know, I want you to use pictures we can use or use an album cover or whatever. And my son did such an amazing job making that video. I also think about, there's a lot of people who weren't alive in the 60s who don't remember how Beatlemania changed the world or the British invasion or the Byrds. I mean, the Byrds were considered the American Beatles for a couple years.
Mm.
And suddenly 3 or 4 years later, they were my total, total heroes.
Mm.
And then a few years later, suddenly I'm in a band with Michael Clark and Chris Hillman and getting to talk to Roger McGuinn. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Truly incredible. And this brings us, I guess, back around to John Jorgensen, because there's that connection once again with Chris Hillman and the Desert Rose Band. And I've just loved all these connections, this interconnectivity between folks right. playing. And it feels like a different sense back then. I asked Judy Collins one time about covering a song, and they didn't even look at it as covering songs. You were just borrowing it from a friend that you heard in a living room somewhere, sitting on a pillow.
Right. Yeah, I can really relate to that. When you think about, okay, so Hinley and Fry and Randy Meisner were Linda Ronstadt's backup band.
Right.
You know, and then they decided, hey, let's maybe try our own thing here. And then, you know, just the interconnectedness. And it was mostly in Los Angeles. Now, there certainly was with the band in New York and Greenwich Village and all of that stuff, where those people pretty much invented folk rock, the Byrds, and country rock, Poco and Gram Parsons, and later the Eagles. And then a lot of them moved to Colorado, and we picked it right up from there. And Firefall was called quite often a country rock band, but I didn't ever think we were. Yeah, maybe Cinderella sounds a little country rock, but
maybe.
You know, particularly by the time we got into Elan, our third album, we were a rock band that would have two or three ballads per record. And I don't really care what people call us, just so long as they listen. And I'm really proud of this Comet album because it sounds like the band. You're right. And I knew that we had to not compete with, but this new album, if we were going to make one, really needed to stand up and sound great alongside the best work we'd done in the 70s. And thankfully, I think we succeeded.
That's so nicely full circle. I would not want to really even launch into anything else. I mean, musically, full circle, and what the fans are aware of, this is a full circle presentation as well. I just want to say thanks, I suppose, for doing it and continuing to do it. It's not like you need to. This is a joy and a love, and you're putting it out there, and people appreciate it.
Well, thanks for saying that, and it's really fulfilling to me to have people like yourself, knowledgeable radio folks, tell me that, you know, that we succeeded and it sounds really good and reminiscent of the 70s. Because, you know, if we had every song like There She Is on the record, people would go,
no.
This isn't Fireball.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I really wanted this to sound like Fireball, and the truth is, maybe this will be the last thing I say, is having three original guys in the band, Mark,
yes.
David, and I, we know how to make good Firefall records, and I think it shows.
I can't thank you enough for your time.
Like I said, you get me talking. It really comes from me being so thankful to be in this position that I'm in. I know how lucky I am to be able to say, yeah, I played with Chris Hillman, or, hey, I got to be on stage with, you know, it's like, wow. I'm really lucky, and I know that there's responsibility that goes with that. So I'm glad that you and everybody else listening to hear it really thinks Comet's up to snuff.
More than this album, Comet, this is not something that I'm just politely asking questions about. I was excited about it, and it is one that I would have in my player turned up loud. Loud like Led Zeppelin, to quote your own song.
Wow, that's funny. Well, you know what? And the last thing I will say is, it was a challenge because the five guys in Firefall live in five different states. We're weekend warriors. We don't go on 30-day tours like we used to. We go out, you know, in normal times up until the end of 2019. We go out and play one or two or three cities every weekend, and each guy has his own life and his own thing going. We fly in and we fly home, and it was so difficult to get us in a practice room together to screen songs, learn songs, get us into a studio to record songs. You know, no wonder the damn record took us almost four years to make. As a producer, I'd be working on a song and I'd need to get background vocals on the song. And I would have had to wait 9 months or something, a year, to get all of us in the studio together to sing. You know, and at that point, I kind of thought, man, I'm going to get Steve and Mark you know, to sing background vocals on a song or two here, because I can get them tomorrow.
Yes.
And we have a lot of guests there, and you can see that we were in about 20 different studios and stuff. But the bottom line is, how does the record sound now? And does it all stand together and sound like one record and one band? And with all of that, you know, that 4 years and five states and the trouble getting people doing it, thank God. I mean, David lives in Tampa. I would send him a song and say, David, I need an organ on this. And he'd email it back to me. Or we did that with Mark's bass part a couple of times, or Sandy's drums. We put together a New Mexico one at a time. Never played that live. It was one at a time. I did the rhythm guitars and sent it to Sandy, and he did the drum part. And then we sent it to Mark, and he did the bass part. So it doesn't sound like that, and I'm really glad, because we were good enough musicians and professional enough to make it sound like we were all playing together, but sometimes we weren't.
Wow. Do you have yet to perform that one together in the same room, or was this one truly assembled?
We've never played a New Mexico.
I want to be there when you do. Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
What a difference a year can make in who I am and where I go. North of the border, now everything's changed. We live in New Mexico.
I'll tell you what, it's been a pleasure.
Yes.
Thanks for all the knowledgeable questions and getting into some side stuff that a lot of people don't consider. And like that whole thing about the right brain quality of playing solos. And then I know that some of the best writers, like a Paul McCartney or a Paul Simon or somebody, sometimes they just sit down at a piano or pick up a guitar and the song comes out. And they're not really having to think about it. It just flows. You know, it's a gift, that's for sure.
Thank you again. I look forward to the next conversation, whether you have leftovers from here that are going to be the basis for a new album, who knows what, but I expect and I hope this to continue. And I don't know if you're still in the Denver-Boulder area, but like I say, if you ever start performing around there again, I'll be looking forward to it. It's been conversation once again with Jock Bartley of Firefall for the entirety of tonight's KVC Arts. This, along with the previous Jock Bartley-focused KVC Arts, make up the entirety of a wonderful conversation, which was interwoven with so much and so many. More on Jock Bartley and Firefall at fire-fall.squarespace.com, and there's also firefallofficial.com. With that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Jock Bartley, as well as to Ann Layton of Layton Media for getting me in touch with Jock. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Sharina Wadd. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.